welcome back to Here, which is the damage report. Not only will we be out of breath, but apparently it's gonna be super awkward, which I guess is on brand. Anyway, it's Friday, isn't that great? Friday brings garbage and people to throw it out, like myself and Brett. How's it going, Brett?
It's all right, man. I'm just trying to make my way in the world today, and it takes everything I got. I'm trying to take a break from all my worries. That sure would help a lot. And John, one burning question on the minds of all the dragons in the Dragon Squad is, wouldn't you like to get away?
I don't understand what.
Sometimes okay. I know it's music.
No,
sometimes
it's good. I get it.
Go.
I like it. I just don't. Have you been watching that recently?
No.
Anyway,
it's rough today, man. We have there's just it's a different flow to the show, to main show, mm-hmm. the Young Turks today, and I forgot to change headphones.
Yeah, no, I like your gamer headphones. You're gonna start playing Last of Us during the stream. Anyway, so I'm not doing the Young Turks today. Why is that?
Because presenting basically in an attempt to shift the burden off of some people who have to talk for 90 hours a day, such as John Iadarola, and bring in people who can help with that. David Schuster will be producing and will be presenting hour two today. And Cenk Uygur will be presenting hour one. And there's two other people on the panel. So we'll see how much they get to talk.
That is very exciting. Very exciting to be replaced. That's cool. Anyway, Cenk is presenting an hour. When was the last time that happened?
Tuesday?
Oh. Okay, well, never mind.
But before that, anyway, it was a year ago. So it was cute because he was all like, I'm not sure. Oh my God, I hope it's okay. We'll see how this goes. But it went.
I mean, he has a bit of experience, I guess. He only presented like 3 hours straight for 8 years or 10 years or something. Anyway,
I just want to say, speaking of presenting 3 hours straight, the people who were joining him today are David Schuster, Wozni Lombre is going to be on both hours, and then Dr. Rashad Ritchie will be on hour one. Dr. Ritchie has his own Twitch exclusive show every Monday after the Damage Report for 3 hours. So you can check out Indisputable right after TDR on Mondays
at
twitch.tv/DYT. Yes.
Do that. Anyway,
I do it every but Sunday.
He's awesome.
On the Sunday stream, which you can watch from 3 to 6.
Is yours 3 hours?
It ends up being 3 hours, but most of it is us just giggling, all of us together.
That sounds cute.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I don't know how Rashad Ritchie does it for 3 hours, but I do know that he's awesome. So you should definitely watch it for 3 hours. So anyway, lots of exciting stuff happening on the network today. Lots of exciting stuff happening here in this hour. We're gonna be talking about some big news. We're gonna be talking about some fun news, as the title of the stream probably alludes to. So a lot going on, and then we're gonna cap it off the way we always do, by filling up the trash with the worst political garbage of the week. I don't know exactly what Brett's is gonna be. I have no idea what the community chose, so very excited for that. Mine is gonna be a bit of a throwback, so that should be fun as well. And that said, along the way, first of all, please hit the like button and share the stream. And beyond that, if you wanna send us some comments or tweets or super chats or anything like that, we'll be reading them as we go. And with that, Brett, you ready to do this thing?
Sure.
Okay, let's do it. Are you surprised to find out that the Biden White House is filled with a bunch of narcs? But anyway, no, really, the big news of the last day, at least domestically, is that despite the fact that it's a Democratic administration and the sort of like opinion nationally about marijuana legalization has really changed, the Biden administration has not changed that much, although they are scrambling to do damage control. The Biden administration has apparently required workers to disclose past marijuana use on a background check form, but told some new hires that it would overlook those who answered yes. Despite this, White House Director of Management and Administration Ann Filipek reportedly led a series of one-on-one calls with staffers this month, asking those who admitted to past marijuana use to resign or be placed in a remote work program. So dozens have been suspended, asked to resign, or forced to work remotely, as if you need to quarantine from someone who used to smoke pot. I don't know what you have to believe about the world to make any part of this seem like a rational system to set up, but this is what they have actually done. And one added little bit of context that I want to add to this before we launch into our commentary and some more details is they were like preemptively asking these staffers to resign because they once smoked pot in a place where pot is legal. But they had to be forced through like a week of negative press to get one of their press people to resign after he was threatening a female reporter. So like, which, what do you take seriously? What do you not take seriously? It is pretty clear in this case. But anyway, we've got a lot more. Brett, what do you think about this? Are you surprised?
The one thing that no one's talking about that is the scariest part of this story is the wording of the alternative for people who will not go quietly into that good night. And that is when you said they will be forced to resign or be placed in a remote work program. Is this some kind of veiled gulag threat?
Like, it sounds gulagish.
Yeah. Like, what are we doing? And it also does one of those things that really, it reminds us of some of the more hilarious and at the same time soul crushingly sad facts of American federalism, which is the like 8-tiered standards of what's legal, what's not legal, what's criminalized, what's not criminalized. And you know, in a country founded by Puritans, the ever present hypocrisy of someone whose essential mentor, Biden's mentor and former boss, Barack Obama, smoking weed, and whose current vice president, aka his own successor in a way, Kamala Harris, smoked weed. Yeah. It is developing in a way where there are other progressive advancements being made by the president, but you know, in the area of LGBT and Q rights and all that. But in this situation, the only words that come to mind are, come on, man.
Come on, man. Seriously.
Like there's, you know.
Seriously, it's 2021.
When it comes to like consequences for smoking weed, I feel like the most pressing one is, you know, the double standard in terms of people of color smoking weed and getting disproportionately locked up for it versus, you know, when the numbers don't really change, like that disproportionality is like priority number one. But in this case, just come on, man.
Yeah. Come on, man. We need a come on, man intro basically, because I doubt this is gonna be the last time. Come on, Jack. This is a bunch of malarkey, someone says in the chat. Yeah, it's 2021. Are we a bunch of babies and not bright babies? Are we a bunch of dumb babies? And yeah, we kind of are. Like, not society. Most of society has moved on this. I don't even think Republican voters get that worked up about it anymore. But politicians do. And not all of them are Republicans. There are plenty of elected Democrats that their mind is off in reefer madness times. It is still a Schedule I drug, not only a couple of months into the Biden administration, but that survived all of the Obama administration for 8 years. It is sitting right next to heroin, marijuana. Brett, I have put 10 things in my body today that are worse for you than marijuana. And I got news for you. Later on, I'm gonna put marijuana in my body and it doesn't matter. I've got a wife, I've got some dogs, I've got a career. Is my health failing? Yes. And is it because of stuff I put in my body? Yes, but not the marijuana stuff, okay? I can pump so much sugar in my body. Do you know how much bargain rate gin I've drank through the course of this pandemic? And I could have legally drank 10 times as much. And I probably still could have gotten a White House job as a result of it. This is so stupid, you dumb baby.
You Gordon's man is the only rubric for John. If he gets so drunk, he drops the bottle that instead of cracking, it just bounces. Is that where you're at?
Bounces. No, you like you have to pay a little bit more to get a brand. Mine says gin in old timey font, but it just says gin.
It says gin like it's Hendrix, freaking 1980s Safeway brands. Gin ingredients. Who cares? Yeah. Don't ask me. And just, we have to circle back to something that John said earlier, which was he put 10 things in his body that are worse for you. So tier two members on the Damage Report, you know, channel membership. Stay tuned on Monday for the top 10 list where John and Francesca go through the top 10 things John put in his body this morning.
God, how did I not know that you'd take it in that direction?
But anyway, I have some dogs, they've been in my body. I have.
Oh my God. Anyway, yeah, no, this is, look, so we're sort of joking because we have to, but this is a Democratic administration totally not needing to do this. Now they're going to hide behind, well, you know, it's still federally illegal. Okay, well, move on that then. Do something about that rather than just laying down in the face of it. But in terms of this, I mean, some of what they're doing is so clearly not even required as a result of that. Anyway, one of the former staffers says the policies were never explained. The threshold for what was excusable and what was inexcusable was never explained. Because bear in mind, as we said, they've told some of them it can be excused, but others are being forced, you know, to go, I guess, live in a hut, like off in snowy places or whatever, like Brett was saying. So what's determining that? Is it completely arbitrary? It's completely stupid, I can say that. And I want to give super fast credit to Andrew Lawrence, a journalist who tweeted this, and it's just so applicable. Joe Biden said no malarkey, and that includes rooting out the roustabouts addicted to jazz cigarettes in his administration. Deal with it. That's all it is. It is that view that Joe Biden and other politicians have, that no matter what they may say on the campaign trail, they still seem to think, and their actions prove out, they think marijuana is some crazy thing that has no relationship to the experience that anyone who actually smokes it or eats it actually has.
It's so crazy. I will also add that, like, to buttress your point, the governor of Nebraska a few days ago literally said, if you legalize marijuana, you're gonna kill your kids.
Now, like, immediately?
Well, that, okay, so there remains to be seen the link between psychosis and marijuana use in like 14-year-olds. For people who are genetically predisposed, that's the one. I've talked to child psychiatrists about this and various other doctors. When people say marijuana, is it okay? Is it not okay? When they say no one's ever died from addiction, all that stuff is true. And the only thing I've ever heard is the link between the potential link that needs more study of psychosis in pre-adolescent minds. Mm-hmm. So that's it. There you are. And this, but that's not what the governor of the guy whose family owns the Cubbies and who is the governor of Nebraska said, as no one behind him was wearing masks and all the other science flouters there clung to this scientific argument that marijuana is going to kill your kids. But
maybe is the point not that it will cause you to kill your kids, but your kids will become like so violent and attack you that you'll have to kill them. I don't know, but
the
I know
it's only stupid. Violence that happens to me when I eat the Wheaties is I violently devour Cheetos. It is impressive.
I want to see that. Anyway, I do want to give
you can't the Biden see it, John.
A chance.
You can't see it because it's just this cloud of Cheeto dust and crunching sounds.
It's like a ninja threw down a smoke bomb, and the only thing that disappears is Cheetos. Anyway, the press secretary put out this tweet saying, as a result, more people will serve who would not have in the past with the same level of recent drug use. The bottom line is this, of the hundreds of people hired, only 5 people who had started working at the White House are no longer employed as a result of this policy. That tweet was sent as a defense. No. So that's the way that this is horrible. Thank you for clarifying. 5 humans have lost their job that shouldn't have, and that's your defense. Oh, so if it's only 5, it's totally cool. It's only 5 in the first couple months of a policy that you intend to continue that will presumably cause more people to lose their jobs that never should have lost their jobs. And again, her office was super defensive about firing a guy who threatened a female reporter, but only 5 people were summarily sent off, you know, packing as a result of the fact that they once smoked a doobie.
It's so crazy. What are they gonna do now? She's like, don't worry about them. They've already announced plans to form a fish cover band.
Oh my God. Anyway, okay, yeah, I just can't. Hopefully, the media coverage of this will result in the policy being changed. Doubt it's going to result in those people getting their jobs back. And I don't know who those people are. I don't know if they're cool or not. I know that if they're gonna lose their job, it probably shouldn't be because they likely smoked a substance that doesn't matter in a place where it was legal to do so.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Here is what Lindsey Graham had to say about this recent talk that you may have heard from people like President Biden and Joe Manchin that the filibuster should continue, but you should actually have to filibuster when you filibuster. Here's what Senator Graham thinks.
Said you talked to Joe Manchin. This is an important question because he said, "I want to make it harder." Joe Biden last night said he wants to bring back, if you want a filibuster, you actually have to get up and keep talking and you don't get to get a bathroom break. Yeah. Okay, that would be bringing it back, but then there would be an end to the filibuster. Then Mitch McConnell weighed in and said it's going to be like a 100-car pileup because you're going to have a quorum or unanimous consent to even turn the lights on at noon, which I kind of like for Mitch McConnell. It surprised me.
Well, no, Mitch is right. A 50-50 Senate, you can't do anything without unanimous consent that matters. And to have a quorum, you got to have 51 people present, and the vice president doesn't count. So if they did this, we could really shut down the entire Senate because we just won't show up. And here's what Biden needs to understand. If you go to the talking filibuster, we will take the floor to stop HR1. I would talk till I fell over to make sure that we don't go to ballot harvesting and voting by mail without voter ID. I would talk till I fell over to make sure that the Equality Act doesn't become law, destroying the difference between a man and woman in our law. So
can
that
you
means
stop
you can't
that,
do
though?
Anything else.
Do you believe, so there's no way they're going to get away with ending the legislative filibuster?
Not with a 50-50 Senate, but I'm here to tell you that if we do not pick up one more seat in 2022 or at least regain the House, if they had 52 Democrats, they would deal Joe Manchin out and they would change the rules of the Senate.
What does taking over the House have to do specifically with that? I mean, his general point, I think, is that they can then go back to stopping everything in a different way, but that has nothing to do with the filibuster. Anyway, Brett, there's a lot there. Really fast, I'd like to say that my overall point, there's other specific points. My overall point is how scared they are, not just at the prospect of not having the filibuster. I get why they would be worried about that. That's what they need. But how terrified they are at the prospect of having to actually filibuster. And it really just, like, all of those arguments about how the filibuster is this great tradition, it leads to bipartisanship, or it's a part of it being the greatest deliberative body in the world and all of that. Immediately, once you ask them to do it like it had been done in the past, they have no interest whatsoever, which I think shows how hollow those arguments actually are.
There is a lot to unpack. First of all, we can't overstate the importance of HR1 as it relates to the filibuster. So HR1 is largely a voting rights act. There's a lot of anti-corruption stuff that, as Cenk has said many times, will be taken out of it probably. But the voting rights issues are very necessary for this filibuster, because without the filibuster, if we do go back to a talking filibuster and it goes back to the way that the framers of the Constitution originally set up the country to function, if we go back to that, then it's going to take 50 votes to do anything in the Senate. Now, the issue is, it is already, for two reasons, more likely that Republicans will win in the Senate. A, it's just there's more Republican leaning states than there are Democratic states. And so, and then when you look at like the way that gerrymandering has happened, as Republicans have invested jillions of dollars over the years to make it so that in states, when they draw their districts, Republicans are overrepresented as it comes down to like a proportion of the population. So we need to keep our eye on the ball in that it absolutely needs to be tied to HR 1 to make it so that we have ways of ensuring that everybody gets a vote. Because when everybody gets a vote, then Democrats tend to win more. And in the Senate, they're already at a disadvantage. So if everybody got to vote, it's very likely that Democrats would still be at a disadvantage in the Senate. So that's one thing to focus on. We need to establish these voting rights, because otherwise what'll happen is the Democrats will get in here and they'll do some, they'll establish the $15 an hour minimum wage. And then the Republicans will get in the next time, because the gerrymandering and the Senate disproportionately represents Republicans, and it'll just swing back the next time.
Maybe. So
it'll probably just swing back the next time. That's one.
I don't know. I mean, did, just did one the dynamic ACA totally swing back? Like, I think that's what they would have you believe. That's what Mitch McConnell basically said, but I wonder if that's actually true. A lot of these big pieces of legislation were, I'm sure, maybe with the voting rights, but some of the ones like, you know, I mean, they didn't immediately come back in and get rid of the ACA. They did try, to their credit, but some of these things are difficult to get rid of. And that's one of the reasons they work so hard to try to block them, is that they know that people would really like them.
Right. So yes, that was a bad example in terms of something wildly popular like the $15 an hour minimum wage would be, but other thing, just any other thing. But there's something else to drill down on here, which is Lindsey Graham. When we go back to the filibuster that it requires you to talk, which is a filibuster, otherwise it's just we just redefine the filibuster when we change the rules in 1974 or five. Like when they talk about the Byrd rule and reconciliation, all that stuff just magically appeared in the 1970s. So if these guys like Lindsey Graham really want to adhere to what the founding fathers created, they don't, it isn't even the founding fathers, anything before 1972 and before, that's what Biden and Manchin are both advocating for, is going back to that. And I think the one thing that we haven't gotten to yet is that a promise, Lindsey? Is that a promise that you're going to filibuster everything? And until just you fall what down. He thinks is popular versus not popular. Like, dude, HR 1, people getting to vote, more people getting to vote. Yeah, people like that. Just ask them. But he knows that they don't want that. And then the other, every other, like the Equality Act, he thinks it's a winning argument to say men and women should not be equal. Dare ya.
Now, by the way,
you got 18 hours, go ahead and talk about it. And it's not until you'd fall over, it's till you have to pee. And you're not going to pull a Strom Thurmond where someone brought a pee bucket to the hallway so he keep 1 foot on the floor when he did his 24 hour talking filibuster.
Oh geez.
It failed, by the way.
Exactly. Now, look, the opposing really popular stuff like that, they are willing to do that. They like doing it the way they have been doing that, with implied filibusters that they don't have to actually do, because that's hidden, it's obscured. Having Lindsey Graham actually stand for 24 straight hours to stop people from getting higher wages, that would be highly unpopular. So they can threaten that they're going to filibuster literally everything. In practice, will they? I think probably a lot less than they say, because they know how unpopular that would be if you were to actually do the filibuster the way the movies say that they should be done. My other point is, this is a bit of advice to people who like to make threats. If you're going to make a threat and say, here's a dark future I want you to consider, make it dissimilar from the status quo. That seems like a good idea. So if you say, if you do X, we'll shut down any progress in the Senate. If the status quo is no progress in the Senate, that's not as scary of a prospect as you seem to believe it is. And for Mitch McConnell, if the dark future is when we get in power, we won't, you know, have any respect for precedent, we'll just do whatever we want, that's already what you've been doing. Your threats suck because you're just describing the way things have been. We're not gonna keep the filibuster so you can block everything at the risk of you blocking everything. That doesn't make any sense. Maybe it makes sense to a conservative audience, but to people who actually care about what the Senate could possibly achieve, that's nothing. That's not actually a threat. That's nonsensical.
Like, I think, anyway. But I think a winning strategy, I don't think it's a good policy, but a winning strategy is for Biden, Manchin, Sinema to say, reestablish the filibuster. Reestablish the filibuster, because that's what it is. Right now, it's cloture. Filibuster is like a bastardized term at this point. Filibuster is pirating the floor to talk until, you know, if you go back to Roman times, until the sun goes down and we don't have electric lights, so we all have to go home. Like that's how it originally started. And all the people who did that were bastards. There's only one time it's ever been used for like a noble cause. The other times it was literally to stop civil rights from happening. And Lindsay, yeah. And all those failed. You know, they still will pass these bills, but if they frame it as we need to save the filibuster and make it so that these guys have to, you know, grandstand for a long time, we'll do it. But we need to focus on that other thing that they were talking about, which is the quorum call. Mm. Like, do you realize how bad of optics that is? What cowards the Republicans are that they're not even gonna show up? Historically, there was something very similar to that in the past in the House of Representatives. It was called the silent filibuster, where they would do roll call. And if you didn't say here, you technically didn't, you know, meet the requirements for quorum. Mm-hmm. And it was a big problem around what time? The Civil War. Mm-hmm. Like it was used to stop it. And so at that time also, we have a proud tradition of people overcoming obstructionists. So what they did in that time, when people were silently not saying here so they wouldn't be counted, the sergeant at arms locked the doors and the person doing roll call just said, I see you, you're here, I see you, you're here. They freaked out. Folks ran for the doors, found that they were locked, and the vote happened, and there was a huge fight on the House of Representatives floor because some folks made some terrible threats to obstruct the original intention of the Constitution. And when they got called out for it, they ended up losing.
Yeah,
because it is a cowardly move to say, well, we're just not gonna come to work.
Yeah. Ripley's, believe it or not, has wax figures of different prominent people in politics and in media. They have this one of Donald Trump, which you can see there. Although nothing against Ripley's, I like Ripley's, but can we zoom in a little bit? I don't know about that. Brett, what do you think?
Well, if it's believe it or not, I'm gonna go with not.
They did give you the choice, to be fair. They're very clear. It's up to you, man. But anyway, sorry, I messed up because I said they have that. I guess they sort of do in storage. You can't see it though, because apparently they had to pull it because a few museum visitors with intense feelings and a lack of self-restraint kept pummeling him. They punched and scratched the figure, inflicting so much damage that management had it pulled from public view. Visitors' attacks apparently increased as the 2020 presidential campaign heated up early in the summer. Not even moving Trump to the lobby, where ticket attendants could keep an eye out for attackers, stop them from taking shots at the staff. Statue, which you can see is dressed in a blue suit and the Republican's trademark red tie, which I assume comes out the bottom of his coat and trails down to the floor. But anyway, we've got some comments from them. Brett, this is stupid. I just think it's the funniest thing that people see. It's not him, but they can't help it. They have to get their claws into it.
It's the anti-wax movement. All these anti-waxers are out there. And they're not following the science. It's all conspiracy mm-hmm. theories. And they need to stop. And it's also cancel culture.
Yeah.
They're trying to cancel representations of the president of the United States from a previous term. I love it. I don't think that's the actual one, because this is in Alamo Plaza. I don't understand the Ripley's, mm-hmm. believe it or not. But yeah, that's not Orlando, Florida. This is just that you just showed an example of a Trump one. Mm-hmm. But good God, man, that is, I get it.
It's not good.
And when you think of all the other punchable, scratchable people that are represented in wax museums the world over. It's really, he should wear it as a badge of honor that people are going up and just punching that thing.
And let me give you a little bit.
Yeah, go for it.
Clay Stewart, regional manager for Ripley Entertainment, said, "We've always had trouble with the presidential section because no matter what president it was, Bush, Obama, or Trump, they've all had people beat them. The ears were torn off Obama 6 times, and then Bush's nose was punched in. People are just aggressive about their political party. When it's a highly political figure, attacks can be a problem. But my favorite part is someone found the initial press release to announce that they were going to have the Trump because they wanted people to be excited and come to see it. This is back in 2017. And it says, just as in real life, wax Trump is polling at about 50%. Loved by some visitors, loathed by others. Come by and show your love or dislike for the president-elect." Well, you can't say that and then get overly pissed when people start punching it. Like you said, show your dislike. They did, they bit it.
I love it so much. I love this story so much. I love the idea of people showing up there and saying, I obviously have to punch him. I obviously have to punch the president of the United States in the face. And I don't think it's just the political issues. I think there's definitely some very base level instinct of the uncanny valley here because something is being stolen. And I think it's my soul when I look into the dead almost eyes of the president.
Yeah, they seem like monsters, basically. It's cool that they have, they seem like monsters. I will say, I immediately begin thinking, why not just charge extra to punch it? That can pay for repairs and stuff. But overall, like, I guess to be Debbie Downer, don't punch the figures, especially the political ones. Like we would hate it if it was Obama being punched or when they had the Obama targets for gun ranges and everything. We're against political violence. Now this is a far cry from storming the Capitol, but the idea that people should get worked up and want to physically take it out on politicians, let me be a Debbie Downer and say I don't think you should do that.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. I can't wait to see the spin coming from people on the right, basically attacking folks for being like, this is worse. This is worse than anything. How dare you? We must protect wax images. Like they're gonna go full Prophet Muhammad on it and be like, no images. Unless those, maybe, I guess not. I mean, then Trump would lose it. He would lose his mind. I mean, the guy spent $10,000 for a painting of himself from his, that he stole from charity. Like that's amazing. And that, I think that's actually the most interesting part of the story is how Trump feels about that. This story, because one, he definitely doesn't want people punching him, but two, the idea that they would get rid of any image or homage to him has got to work on the inner creases of his soul.
Yeah, and if Francesca was here, she would talk about his other outer creases. Anyway, she's been really just driving me insane.
She was asking about what his under boob smells like, right?
I know she has figured out a particular sort of comedy to drive me mad, actually. What did the oil industry know and when did they know about it when it comes to the link between basically the entirety of what they produce and the effect that it has on worldwide pollution and specifically what that then does to our health? Well, it turns out they knew a lot and they knew a lot a long time ago. And there have been bits and pieces of this for some time, old documents that get leaked and all that. Here though, we have a bunch of new stuff and a compilation of how it's just so overwhelming when you see how much a variety of different fossil fuel companies knew going back half a century or more. So apparently the oil industry knew at least 50 years ago that air pollution from burning fossil fuels posed serious risks to human health. In internal memos and reports, Imperial Oil, an Exxon subsidiary, acknowledged in 1967, the petroleum industry was a quote, major contributor to many of the key forms of pollution and took surveys of quote, mothers who worried about possible smog effects. In an internal technical report in 1968, Shell went further, warning that air pollution may in extreme situations be deleterious to health. health and acknowledging the oil industry reluctantly must accept that cars are by far the greatest sources of air pollution. The report states that sulfur dioxide given off by the burning of oil can cause difficulty in breathing, while nitrogen dioxide also given off by vehicles and power plants can cause lung damage, and that, quote, there will be a clamor to reduce nitrogen dioxide emissions, probably based on suspected long-term chronic effects. Fast forward a good number of years. By 1980, Imperial Oil had outlined plans to investigate incidences of cancers and birth defects among industry worker offspring. This is their own people. ESO experts, meanwhile, raised the possibility for improved particulate control in new vehicle designs to reduce the emissions of harmful pollution. 10 years after that, Exxon had an internal report that said, we have become more aware of the potential impacts our operations might have on safety and health. By this point, independent scientists and academia were amassing their own evidence of the influence of air pollution. It took that long. There was, in 1993, there was the Harvard Six Cities study, which found air pollution was spurring deaths from heart disease and lung cancer, and that caused some pressure for the EPA to actually do something about it. Then a scientist commissioned by the American Petroleum Institute, a US oil and gas industry group, told a congressional hearing in 1997, the link between air pollution and mortality was, quote, weak, before Exxon pushed out its own study claiming, quote, there's no substantive basis for believing PM 2.5, a size of particulate matter, was causing more deaths. So look, there's more, but when finally the bulk of independent research, which was required because of all of that internal research, was hidden for literally decades, once the independent research caught up and showed that this is a very clear and in hindsight obvious connection that is killing tons of people in the US and abroad, they began lying. Even though some of the people they deployed to tell the laws before Congress probably hadn't even been born when they first started to themselves diagnose the connection between the pollution that was an inherent consequence of their operations and the effect that it was having on people's health.
Yes. Brett, what do you think? If you look at the timeline also, obviously, like this, if you look at the when all this stuff was happening, around the middle of the years John cited was when Nixon, a Republican, started the EPA. Mm-hmm. And everyone's like, these are just scientific ways of explaining what people at the time were very obviously suffering from and knew about. If you looked outside your window in a metropolitan area, mm-hmm. this is going to sound very David Rubin-y, but in the show Mad Men, the guy kills himself by inhaling, he knows to kill himself with inhaling what's coming out of his car. Mm-hmm. People know, no one was like, that's probably pretty good for you. Everyone knew that. So that's one.
Coughs are getting out the toxins.
So
what's
so
the other aspect?
These are sometimes the kinds of studies that you need to come out in order to kind of shake people once again and say all of the posturing, the economic posturing from big businesses that try to tie this to jobs. Is really just tying it to income of wealthy CEOs who want to keep killing people, period. Mm-hmm. And there's one other aspect when you say, you mentioned the size of fine particulate matter that comes out of various exhaust pipes, be they cars or chemical plants or coal refineries. The medical term for losing your baby as a result of inhaling too much of this, something's proven clinically, is called spontaneous abortion, which I hate to be the guy that uses that as an opportunity to make some, but I'm doing it to make some very real positive change in the world. I think in a time and place where people, where there's so much dark money going around and there's so many ways to hide where you're coming from, I think this is an opportunity for a left-leaning organization with some money behind it, be it grassroots or anything else, to go start messaging specifically on Facebook and Twitter and everywhere possible to religious groups to say that if we continue with these plants spewing particulate PM 2.5 or whatever nanometer parts per billion coming out of these refineries, it's killing unborn babies. And I think that's a way to find a new coalition to get people to push for real tangible environmental policies that kind of shift the paradigm to getting more people, a broader coalition of folks to support these kinds of reforms that we're all advocating for, but get called crazies who are, you know, chicken littles about the end of the world on the left. Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good idea. I hope that it would work. might not to have a knee-jerk reaction, but I feel like all of the arguments about abortion that are placed in a wrapper of wanting to protect babies, I think all of that is totally fake and it is just about the abortion. These people do not seem to, in other areas, care about, you know, child mortality and, you know, all of that. But it's a clever idea. It's certainly something worth.
No, you hate it. I'll hang up.
The last,
like my ideas. It's fine. It's just Skype. Go ahead. Have a fun rest.
It's an idea that is well placed for a rational, logical world that I wish we lived. Anyway, the final point I want to make is, so what we've identified here, and these documents show, is decades of people, you know, CEOs of the energy companies knowing what's going on but stopping it. Then you have a couple of decades of their lobbyists, wealthy people, knowing what's going on and stopping it. Are we past that? We're not past that, because I want to jump ahead. Last year, in the midst of a historic pandemic of respiratory disease, Trump's EPA decided to not strengthen standards around fine soot particles. A Harvard study found that air pollution was associated with worse outcomes for people with COVID-19. Because remember, when he got in, the EPA was taken over by the exact same people, basically, that had been lobbyists, that had been working at these industries. They had just fully invaded and could now give them whatever they wanted from the inside. So Trump is gone. That's good news. Is the Biden EPA going to strengthen these standards? Are they going to produce more regulations on this sort of pollution, both when plants produce it, when cars produce it? It remains to be seen, but we've already wasted decades and decades, and God only knows how many people have died around the world. It is many, many millions of people have died as a result of this sort of pollution. How many more years are we going to have to wait? That would be my question. Ron DeSantis is the governor of Florida, where he 100% did not win the pandemic, regardless of whatever Politico might have to say about it. But that's a story for another time. He wants to distract you from the many, many failures along the way of him as governor by doing this. Take a look at his announcement of what's going to happen with the educational curriculum in Florida.
Florida civics curriculum will incorporate foundational concepts with the best materials, and it will expressly exclude unsanctioned narratives like critical race theory and other unsubstantiated theories. Let me be clear, there's no room in our classrooms for things like critical race theory. Teaching kids to hate their country and to hate each other is not worth one red cent of taxpayer money. So we will invest in actual, solid, true curriculum, and we will be a leader in the development and in implementation of a world-class civics education.
So Brett, first let's note, as I saw in Twitch, cool clapping. Like this right. is supposed to be red meat, and they're like, I guess, is this good? Now, I have a potential explanation as to why people are a little bit confused, and that is that when you see the governor say that he's blocking the teaching of critical race theory in Florida state schools, that might lead you to believe that it's taught there, but it's not. Critical race theory is not part of Florida's social studies standards for public schools, nor a course taught by its teachers, according to the Florida Department of Education's website, listing classes and the benchmarks that must be covered in each grade and subject. So in theory, it could be potentially somewhere, but it's not. So banning it is awful for all of the obvious reasons that have led to him doing it, but also because it's not changing anything. They don't teach it now as part of the official curriculum.
Right. So yeah, I'm against monkey strangling me then cutting off my head with a sword, because that's really something. That doesn't happen. No one gets strangled by monkeys and gets their head cut off by monkey swords. Like, he's just you just said it was a threat. You weren't here for it, but I vanquished the, you know, fictional threat. It is all about fear. And I do want to point out, Florida will continue to give the world-class civics lessons that it always does. Florida, home to one thing everybody knows, Florida man. Like Florida. Notorious for being bad at knowing stuff, at being quote decent members of society. They're infamous for sucking at that. And yeah. And it's due to exactly this approach. So when they say the world class civics, that same demo that he's trying to fan the flames away from or toward, based depending on your perspective, they want you to teach everybody that dinosaurs and humans coexisted. Mm-hmm. They don't, and if, what are you going to go toward, more science-based teachings? More explicitly, empirically proven non-social science, but more science-based teachings? Then let's talk about climate change. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about all that. It's just that this thing about the right, whether it's influencers like the Dave Rubens and, you know, increasingly the Glenn Greenwalds, like their job is to just absolve white D-bags of any responsibility. And in exchange, they get Patreon dollars for that group. But for all the politicians, they get put back in office because all they do is tell everyone, no, you never did anything wrong. Everything's perfect. The way that you've been in control without ever being questioned or challenged, you get to keep doing that. And everyone who's questioning or challenging you is evil. Critical race theory, when it boils down to it, is just saying, let's acknowledge some realities about America. And specifically ensure that America lives up to the promises it made.
Yeah.
Not let me give the hypocrisies it had at the time it was making those promises.
Florida civics curriculum will incorporate foundational concepts with the best materials, and it will expressly exclude unsanctioned narratives like critical race theory and other unsubstantiated theories. Let me be clear, there's no room in our classrooms for things like critical race theory. Teaching kids to hate their country and to hate each other is not worth one red cent of taxpayer money. So we will invest in actual, solid, true curriculum, and we will be a leader in the development and in implementation of a world-class civics education.
God only knows if what you just saw from DeSantis is only what you think it actually is, especially because he talks about, we're not gonna do that, we're gonna do actual true things, as if critical race theory is untrue or fundamentally true or untrue when it is but a lens through which to look at things. But the ABA says critical race theory critiques how the social construction of race and institutionalized racism perpetuates a racial caste system that relegates people of color to the bottom tiers. CRT also recognizes that race intersects with other identities, including sexuality, gender identity, and others. CRT recognizes that racism is not a bygone relic of the past. Instead, it acknowledges that the legacy of slavery, segregation, and the imposition of second-class citizenship on Black Americans and other people of color continue to permeate the social fabric of this nation. It is a philosophical framework through which one can look at things and try to learn things. And he doesn't like it. But there's one other thing I want to talk about this. We can circle back. But my last thing is, what is the biggest threat to America if you ask the right? Well, maybe immigrants, maybe trans girls in sports. But generally, it's cancel culture. And what is cancel culture? That is when they stop things for just because they're not politically correct. He literally said, this is an exact quote, they are going to expressly exclude unsanctioned narratives. Unsanctioned narratives, the government says. So, I mean, look, again, I'm sort of assuming that there should be some sort of consistency or something like that. So, according to them, cancel culture is when a private company decides that they're going to stop publishing a few of Dr. Seuss's books that you've never heard of. It is not cancel culture, though, when the government decides which narratives are sanctioned or are not, what your children will be able to learn or not. I mean, if cancel culture exists, if it is supposed to be a threat, there can be no better example of it than one politician deciding what you're allowed to hear or not. Not some private company making a decision based on an assumption about how it'll affect their profits, but a politician deciding unilaterally what your kids can learn or not. But I doubt they'll. Yeah. For the thoughts.
100%. No, yeah. That was it.
Okay. I hate him, and he's really bad. That's what I would say. He's bad. and he should feel bad. It's the end of the week, and so it's time to take out the trash. Okay, every week I choose a garbage person. Brett chooses a garbage person. The community does as well. For this week, there was a lot of garbage this week. And so usually we don't repeat. Like, the garbage person usually won't be something we've already talked about. But sometimes exceptions need to be made. And so my garbage person is going to be something. I just want to put a pin on this and remind people that with some of the terrible violence that we've seen over the past few months, and especially this week in Atlanta, Donald Trump is my garbage person once again. Bit of a throwback, he's not president anymore, but sometimes the things that he did as president continue to make our country just a little bit worse long after he's gone. And so I want to remind you that while we don't know for sure if there's a direct connection between Trump's constant stoking of racist hatreds and fears to the Atlanta attack, it certainly hasn't helped in this particular area. And so here's a great mashup, by the way, that was put together, I believe, by Stephen Colbert's team for Trump's encouragement of a very specific sort of xenophobia.
COVID-19, or as I call it, the China virus.
The China virus.
The China virus.
The China virus.
I call it the China virus.
I call it the China plague.
Kung flu. Yeah. Kung flu.
Yeah, oh God, the one that I think might have been at CPAC, just it makes me more mad because when they would claim that they're doing it just because it's important that you recognize where this came from, that was obviously just transparently not true. But him just like grinning a little bit as a bunch of young racists love that he's making a racist joke in a public place and he's just having fun with it, not caring that people at the time were telling him, hey, could you please stop doing this? This is leading to tons of harassment and hate crimes. Could you not do this? But he's having fun. The racists are having fun. And so I have a little bit more that I'm gonna add to this, but Brett, thoughts?
There's all the obvious things, but there's another like not as obvious thing that's specifically like your logic breaks down even further if you hate Chinese people in America. First of all, I hate Chinese people in America because they're of Chinese descent or left China. It's like they don't want to, like if you're angry at the Chinese Communist Party, odds are so are they. They're here. They're not there. They left there. What's wrong with you? The same people are like together with Cuban refugees in America talking about how bad communism is in Cuba. Well, why are you not with the people who left China to come here? And the answer is just selective ignorance and raises it. That's super frustrating. Everything else has been covered and you're absolutely right on all of it. But that was just another thing that jumped out to me recently. That's like, what are you? You're gonna beat up someone who also left China? Morons.
They're here. They want to be here. They want to be part of us in exactly the way that every one of us has become one of us. You know,
not exactly the same way that every one of us has become one of us, slave trade, but yes.
That's true. Yes.
And Native Americans. But yes, obviously.
Thank you for acknowledging that. Yes. But at least in the last century or so, my family has been here marginally longer than some of the people that are being harassed, although not all. And when we came over, it was for the same reasons, in the same way, and we're largely greeted in the same sort of xenophobic way. But we have no historical vision whatsoever. We can't learn anything from the, and Brett just alluded to some of the worst outcomes of the our weird mix of the way we greet different groups of this country with hatred and violence and all of that. And to see it not just continued to this day, but massively defended, you know, like throughout this week, we had a reminder of how deadly racism can be in America. But we also had a reminder that there's a ton of people in media, you know, and some of the people you were alluding to earlier, they're gonna find ways to apologize for it and pretend that that's not so bad. It's never actually the racism. There is nothing you can do, no matter how explicitly racist, that will get some of these people to ever acknowledge that race is a problem or might have influenced it. But anyway, I want to tie this into one other thing I saw, and that is that you remember back when Donald Trump used to be on social media? That was a bad idea, it turns out. And we have one more reason for why it was a bad idea. This is a study. A tweet by then President Trump using the phrase Chinese virus sparked an increase in the use of anti-Asian hashtags on Twitter, according to a University of California San Francisco study published earlier this week. Researchers examined nearly 700,000 tweets containing more than 1 million hashtags in the days leading up to and after Mr. Trump's tweet. The United States will be powerfully supporting those industries like airlines and others that are particularly affected by the Chinese virus. We will be stronger than ever before, he tweeted. Actually, it's almost the exact year anniversary. Researchers also found that those who use the hashtag Chinese virus were significantly more likely to use other overtly racist hashtags. Those who use the hashtag COVID-19 use fewer racist hashtags. So once again, just like with the big election lie, him saying these things publicly lead to more people doing it. Now, do we know for sure that that led to some of these people harassing or attacking Asian Americans? No, we don't know that. But I would say that more racism of any sort is a bad thing. And so him being taken off of Twitter is a social good for a number of different reasons. Here is just one more piece of evidence of that.
Yep, that makes sense. He is horrible. I don't like Trump either. You would be shocked to discover that I don't like Trump either.
That's true. I'm not a fan.
My garbage person of the week is Matt Gaetz. Oh, Matt Gaetz, for many reasons. One is related to this recent back and forth between President Biden and Vladimir Putin. And what happened? Essentially, Biden called Putin a killer. Putin said to Biden, takes one to know one, fancy rejoinder. And then afterwards, Putin challenged Biden to a debate. And you would think that most American politicians would say, let's go America. I hope the American guy beats the Russian guy in a debate. But that's not true, as we find out from New York Magazine. Trump lackeys are teaming up again with Putin to mock Biden. And if we look at one of them, this is Donald Trump Jr., just to give you a flavor of it. He says, Putin just challenged Joe Biden to an unscripted live debate. The whole world knows that we have no leadership at the top, just an empty suit with a teleprompter, and he can't even get that right. They look at America's weakness right now and are salivating. So that's something to be expected from Trump's son. But Matt Gaetz, let me remind you, is a garbage person. And Matt Gaetz, current American representative in the House of Representatives, is actually advocating, essentially rooting for Putin. So here we go, take a look.
Putin and Biden, it would not end like Rocky IV. I don't think the American would prevail.
He is saying this is not gonna be like Rocky IV. Dude, your best boy, your daddy lost to Biden in a debate, every debate. And you thought that would be great. But so that's just one thing. So you're calling in your grandpa to fight the fights for you? You moron. Mm-hmm. So that's my garbage person, that this guy is like, you know, my guy lost, but maybe Putin did.
It's so weird. I hate every part of this story. Like, I have no interest in Biden and Putin getting into, you know, a Trump and Kim style back and forth. I'm not interested in that. I'm not interested in the remote possibility that it could have a real world impact. I'm not even interested in just the theatrics of it. I think it's stupid and pointless. But while that's happening, I don't like the media reaction either. The weird siding with, at least it's consistent. It is consistent. I don't like any of this. I don't like what it's going to lead a bunch of centrist libs to say about this.
Yeah.
The whole thing is just so nasty and I have no interest in it. I hate it even more now that Don Jr.'s been roped into it. Matt Gaetz was bad enough. You gave us double the garbage. Our bin is going to overflow.
There you go. Well, I'm glad anyway, I could.
Good contribute. Garbage person. Thank you. Good garbage person. Okay, now, what about you? Not just one or two of you. What about 39,000 of you who voted in this week's Garbage Person of the Week poll? Producing 5 extraordinary pieces of garbage. Coming in at number 5, at 9% of the vote, you have Steven Crowder for his racist tirade against black farmers. Steven Crowder continuing his lifelong streak of being a massive loser, coming at number 5 there. At number 3 and 4, tied at 10% each, you have, on the one hand, a high school announcer for using racist slurs and then blaming diabetes. That was an amazing thing there. You have spring breakers for pretending the pandemic doesn't exist. So tied there, both bad. personally think the Spring Breakers is a lot worse, but you know, because they're gonna kill people. At number two this week, at 29% of the vote, you have the Georgia sheriff spokesperson for his having a bad day comments. That was really bad. And by the way, he was removed from his position. We had that poll yesterday. Nobody thought it would happen, but it did happen. But number one, and the community garbage person of the week this week, at 43% of the vote, you have Texas Republicans for passing blatant voter suppression laws. I love that, both because I think that that's really bad. And I love that the audience prioritizes that. I think, you know, our continuing campaign to get people to take democracy seriously and protect it. I like that we have a lot of allies in that fight. So thank you to all of you who voted a massive amount. Really do appreciate that.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.